Support comes from Mosby Building Arts. This year, put your trust in Mosby Building Arts for fresh designs and the elevated remodeling experience you deserve. Inspiration at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. ...2025 was a historic year for the St. Louis region. Major headlines featured the devastating May 16th tornado and its aftermath, problems in our local justice system, and political maneuverings at all levels. And in our newsroom, those same issues are still being covered in 2026. And three reporters who spend their days and often nights covering those stories join me now. I'm here with Kayvon Mansouri, economic development reporter. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Lucretia Wimbley, general assignment reporter. Welcome back. And politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for joining us for this reporter roundtable to start the new year. Now, all of you have already been working in 2026. And before we get to regional issues, there's some major news from Sunday, and that's the American invasion of Venezuela and the arrest of its president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife. Lucretia, you covered a protest over that action right here in St. Louis. What stood out to you?
Yeah, so naturally, like, the protest was against what Trump has led the U.S. to do, which was invade Venezuela, as you mentioned, and capture President Maduro. But what stood out to me was, like, there was one guy who was a heckler of sorts, but he, as protesters were marching and chanting, some were calling for Trump's impeachment, others were, you know, pretty much saying that, you know, our tax dollars could go towards, be put to better use, you know, instead of being put towards, you know, what they, you know, call war efforts. One guy, you know, was shouting at the same time as protesters were marching and, you know, loudly chanting. And he was just like, you know, you guys are wrong. Pretty much essentially, there's multiple sides to every story. And he, you know, I paused, I held back a little bit to talk to him. And he said that his one of his loved ones was raped and captured by some militant group over in Venezuela. Not U.S. related, of course, but some group over in Venezuela. And he was, seemed very emotional behind this happening. And he was saying that, like, protesters being against Trump don't know what they're talking about, and that us, the U.S. invading Venezuela is a necessary move, and that, you know, Maduro being captured is a good thing, you know, because he wasn't a good president, you know, it's his guy's perspective. And he was just saying that, you know, he was encouraging the protesters to take some time to actually assess, you know, other people's perspectives instead of, you know, just coming out and hitting the streets and being so quick to just, you know, I guess only see it from one point of view. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing that stood out to me, I'd say.
And did you see anybody else trying to engage that person in conversation or?
Yeah, so protesters, a few, like maybe a handful of protesters did stop and went back and forth with him, but it was like mainly argumentative. Like no one was really hearing each other out and they were just shouting over each other for the most part. But like I said, that's why I kind of held back from the march a little and talked to the guy. And that's pretty much what he had to say.
Mm-hmm. And what did the protesters have to say about why they oppose this recent action?
Yeah, a lot of them just, they say that Trump is a liar and that a lot of promises that he made, you know, to be anti-war, he's going back on that now is what they had to say. And they say that, you know, like I mentioned, U.S. tax dollars being put towards war efforts or to get involved in other countries' affairs, it's just not the way to go. And some people brought up the North Side here in St. Louis and said, you know, for example, that money that's going towards war effort, you know, is our tax dollars and could be put to, you know, building up the North Side, especially after the tornado here.
Mm, so there's local relevance in different ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Jason, you spoke to several officials from Missouri and Illinois to get their reactions to this action. What are these politicians saying?
I think it's splitting along partisan lines, which is predictable, but shouldn't be predictable. Donald Trump ran for president in 2024 on a platform of not getting into wars, And since he's come back into office, he has launched attacks not only in Venezuela, but Nigeria, Syria, Iraq, Somalia, sometimes for perfectly legitimate reasons, but other times for, reasons that are not really clear, like what happened over the weekend. Like initially after the invasion happened, a lot of Republicans felt that this was going to actually put the person that almost certainly won the election in 2024 in power. And instead, Trump is just supporting Maduro's vice president, who doesn't seem to want to play ball with the United States. So I was surprised that there wasn't more Republican outcry, given that many of them had parroted President Trump's so-called aversion to getting involved in wars. One person we haven't heard from yet is Senator Josh Hawley, who was very much opposed to providing any weaponry to Ukraine. And I find his silence on this interesting, because he either has decided he doesn't want to comment on it, or he is genuinely conflicted about supporting an effort that is clearly interventionalist when he has been talking a big non-interventionalist game for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Missouri U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt also praised Trump and said in a statement on X that, quote, "We are a superpower. This is our hemisphere, and we're going to start acting like it again. President Trump is taking back control." What do you make of that, Jason?
I was struck by that, given that Senator Schmidt has also spoken much about realism and non-interventionalism in foreign affairs, especially when Biden was president. But I also think that there is a limit to what the United States can do. Are we really going to invade Brazil because we don't like Lula's government? Are we going to invade Mexico, which, you know, we tried to do in the 1910s under Woodrow Wilson, and it didn't really go well? In fact, like, Eric Schmidt likes to talk about how bad Woodrow Wilson was, and I agree with him. Woodrow Wilson's one of the worst presidents we've ever had. Warren G. Harding was a better president than him. That's how bad he was. But Woodrow Wilson ran in 1916 to keep the country out of war. And then the next year, he got America into World War I. Well, Donald Trump's looking a lot like Woodrow Wilson 2.0 by campaigning on not getting people into war, or getting America into war, and then starting, albeit a short war, with Venezuela. Even if it lasts 3 or 4 hours, the impact could be years, if not decades, depending on what happens next.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about an event and a news story, but there are clearly issues still to be hashed out. We'll be following what happens in the days ahead. We want to move to another topic that has to do with 2025 and most certainly will define 2026, and that's the ongoing recovery from St. Louis's May 16th tornado. And Kayvon, you are our economic development reporter, and one of your last reports of 2025 had you working with Andrea Henderson, and you uncovered how people whose lives have been hugely impacted by the tornado have had to fight insurance companies to fix their homes. And in that reporting, you quoted multiple residents. How did you first come to learn that this was happening, these fights with insurance companies?
Yeah, it was one of the first weeks that I had started working in St. Louis Public Radio, and I wanted to stop in on some of the ward meetings that happened. It was Alderwoman Shamim Clark Hubbard's ward meeting, and it was basically the entire evening was talking about insurance. And I was struck because there were so many people at that meeting just talking about they were just basically having so much trouble getting any sort of help. And eventually a woman named Emma stood up, and she described her situation basically as saying, like, my roof was torn off and we did not get a new roof for 3 months, and we've been fighting with this insurance company, State Farm, for you know, at that point it was like 5 months. You know, it had been going on for a while because I was actually working here when the tornado hit, but in the aftermath. And I started talking to her, and Andrea had talked to many people as well, and we just kept hearing the same story over and over again. You know, Emma was telling me that, you know, I keep a list of people in my phone who I've run into at, you know, the gym or things like that, of people who are going through the exact same thing in North City, where their tornado was their house was really ravaged by the tornado, but they're really struggling to get any sort of help or to get what they feel is owed. There obviously, we know there was a big problem with non-insured homes in North City after the tornado, but there was also a big problem with underinsured homes. Homes that were insured. Emma and her husband's home had a $500,000 policy on it. And I think to date, I think after our story ran, they got a little more of that money. But before we had, they had only seen about $20,000 of a $500,000 policy, where the roof was ripped off their home. Water had leaked into it for weeks because that roof was not replaced and it wasn't tarped well. The stories just kind of kept coming, and we've heard more since that story is published about these sort of struggles.
And so what is next in this, you know, ongoing fight with insurance companies? How are you going to be following up?
Yeah, you know, actually, after we published, some representatives from State Farm told me there's more information coming, and that they're, you know, they're keeping an eye on this and trying to work toward, you know, paying what is owed to their customers. We're going to be keeping a close eye on this because, you know, as we talk and really, really, the recovery of North City is a huge focus for this newsroom. You know, I feel it every day. We meet weekly to discuss what our plans are to tackle this story. That will ripple throughout St. Louis's history for, you know, really a very, very long time. So insurance plays a big part of that, because as we watch to see what happens in the recovery process, we're actually looking to see what North City is going to look like. You know, what that patch of neighborhood, that community is going to, how they're going to recover, if everyone will be able to come back, how that will look. These are very old homes that we're talking about that are not easily fixed. You know, there's some new ways that they're thinking about putting that community back together with new housing, but that's kind of, so it's going to be, we're going to have to pay a lot of attention to it and keep following up these people who are having these insurance problems and just keeping an eye on the situation there. Mm-hmm.
Lucretia, you also covered the tornado's aftermath, and you did so from many angles, and that included the tragic ones. Talk with us a bit about how you covered a situation, you know, a set of circumstances that was so chaotic and very complicated.
Yeah. So, first of all, covering the aftermath of the tornado was just devastating, generally speaking, for me and all of my colleagues, you know, let alone any journalist, I believe, you know, in the city, just because of, you know, the devastating nature of the storm and how many people were displaced. And so I will say, though, that speaking to the loved ones of and relatives of people who actually died in the storm was particularly difficult because, you know, as a journalist, you know, we are professional, you know, at what we do. But there's also a degree of, like, empathy that you have to hold for people, not only in this circumstance, generally speaking, of course, as journalists. But I will say that it was emotionally heavy, you know, to have to balance, you know, approaching people right after the storm, who are devastated, who are, you know, crying, who are, you know, the last thing they want is to have a microphone in their face, you know, talking about, you know, how they feel about what happened, you know. And so the way I approached it was just to give people space to be human, you know, didn't really even go in asking a lot of questions. You just approach, and you just simply you treat people as human beings, because we're all human, and you just ask, how are you doing? You know what I'm saying? What can I do to help, most importantly, in that moment, you know? But what I found was a lot of people were super willing to share, and if anything, to vent.
What were they venting about?
They just wanted to share their frustrations with the city, for the most part. A lot of people were super angry, you know, dare I say, with the mayor's administration for not sounding the sirens. A lot of people were questioning, you know, could my loved one have been saved if they had even just a few seconds of warning to be able to get out of their house or get down to a basement or wherever, you know. So that's what they mostly were venting about, just frustrations with the city.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the big stories of 2025 and what reporters at St. Louis Public Radio are planning to follow up with and to follow in 2026. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our reporters' roundtable, looking back at the biggest news stories in 2025 and what our newsroom is covering in 2026. I'm here with economic development reporter Kayvon Mansouri, Lucretia Wimbley, general assignment reporter, and politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Now, before the break, we were discussing, Lucretia, your reporting on St. Louis's devastating May tornado, and you spoke about the grief and anger that some residents are not only feeling, but were willing to share with you. You've also been covering the environmental impacts of the tornado, and that includes changes in the wildlife and how residents are responding to that. Tell us about that and how that hit your radar.
Sure. So we held a listening session, STOPR did. I believe that was, a couple months ago at this point. And, you know, several people came out and, you know, shared their experience and how they've been coping since the storm happened, and how their neighborhoods are faring and, you know, so on and so forth. And so it was during that listening session that I spoke with a couple women, and they shared that, you know, one thing that we hadn't heard a lot about is, you know, wildlife and, you know, whether or not there's been an influx of wildlife in neighborhoods, or, you know, even insects and, you know, entomology and how the storm impacted, you know, those ecosystems. And so these women shared that they've been they created a buddy system in their neighborhood with their neighbors where they, you know, have, I think, a group on text, and they, you know, share updates on whether or not they see wild coyotes in their neighborhoods. And apparently they have been seeing wild coyotes, and they walk around carrying sticks in their neighborhoods if they out, you know, want to go out and take a walk or whatever, just to protect themselves. And so, yeah, that was very interesting to me, because that's, personally, at least, that was something I hadn't really thought too much about. In addition to that, some of their neighboring houses that were completely destroyed by the storm, or, you know, it's just in disrepair and no one's, you know, it is now vacant. Some of those homes are overrun with rodents, like mice, rats, you know, and all types of insects, and squirrels even have, you know, moved into some of these vacant homes. And but the thing is, homes that are not vacant, that are still occupied, that live next to these vacant homes, some squirrels are jumping from the vacant homes over onto their properties. And so that's some of the things that those women at the listening session had to say. And it was just very interesting. They also said that they've had seen large swarms of, like, gnats and things like that, that have just increased in their neighborhoods, which they say is very frustrating to have to, you know, navigate and deal with.
Right. And given the season too, I wonder what will be happening as these colder temperatures sort of continue to make their way through. You'd mentioned, Lucretia, people being upset with local government. And Jason, you know, the tornado is a political issue as well. And there are questions about whether this region will see more aid from the state or the federal government. I mean, are we any closer to an answer on that?
I don't know yet. I remember when I was talking with Kara Spencer about where St. Louis was, I don't know, 6 months or so. Has it been 6 months? I've lost track of time. One of the things that is possible is getting some large-scale funding for housing-related matters dealing with the tornado. That it could be separate from FEMA. Maybe that's more HUD or something along those lines. I haven't really heard anything from the state, given that the state did give $100 million to the city, and I am not really sure if much of that or any of that has been spent. So they probably want to make sure that's spent before asking for more. But I think it's pretty evident if you look at the damage that it's going to, there's going to be need to be more federal and state money to help with the recovery. There's really no other way to put it if you have eyes.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of money, Kayvon, tax incentives are a major factor in the rebuilding of North St. Louis in particular. How are you hoping to follow that issue as recovery continues?
Tax incentives, my favorite. yeah, so I mean, it's a huge focus of my beat is tracking these things. We've already seen a little bit of that in a few different places. There have been actually small tornado damage, just like single family homes that have received abatements from, I believe the Board of Aldermen approved one to help them sort of rebuild. It actually, I think it was a project that was started before the tornado, but was damaged during, and they received an abatement. But now there's a recent project that was approved right before the holidays by the St. Louis Development Corporation, which is kind of like the development arm of St. Louis City. They approved some tax incentives basically for modular homes that they hope to build, these this sort of project to build. And that's what I was talking about earlier, this sort of these houses that will look very different from what we know of North City, these kind of beautiful historical brick homes that, you know, I think anybody who lives in the city has come to really love. You know, those are going to be probably replaced in a lot of ways when the bulldozing starts of these old properties with new sort of developments, that these sort of easy to put together modular buildings that are you know, made at a somewhere else and kind of like trucked in. So that's a big project that's happening. And again, that's going to play into what this neighborhood looks like going forward, what these communities will be. So that's a big part of it. The incentives, there's been a lot of questions from some of the aldermen I've talked to, some of the people in the community I've talked to about what sort of incentives will be offered for those sort of projects, those smaller projects to bring that community back. We often see incentives offered to bigger projects, mm-hmm. And I think that from what I hear and some of the conversations I've had, even with the folks at SLDC, there may be, there's talks of all sorts of different incentives to get this community back on its feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of incentives and development, one of the other big stories of 2025 had to do with the data center, and this was all over the country and here too. You spent a lot of time looking into these projects. Why did this issue become so big last year?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the story of, when it comes to economic development and the climate, it's a big deal. I remember the first day I kind of got involved, Kate Grumke, our climate reporter, came to my desk and said, "Hey, what do you know about LLCs?" And I'm like, "A lot. Like, what do you need to know?" And she had was looking into the data center proposal down in St. Charles, and she had found this FOIA for or Sunshine request for this non-disclosure agreement, and all was on there was this sort of like very vague LLC. So we started to dig into the documents, and we eventually found that that Google was likely involved in the proposal down there. Well, that kind of like spun into this whole spider web of all these data centers that are now popping up everywhere. You see them, one in Jefferson County that is popping up. There's of course the Armory data center that's been proposed that has had so much pushback. The St. Charles project that led to a year long moratorium on any sort of data center proposals there. I think the Post-Dispatch had a story about two more in the St. Charles area that are popping up. The reason is there's actually a real need for these data centers as we continue to sort of grow as a digital society. There actually is a need for more servers and more support. However, we know that data centers, when they come, they offer sort of a It's a mixed bag. So for governments like the city of St. Louis, they are really interested because it could be a huge economic incentive for them, right?
Right.
Absolutely. But also there are a lot of other setbacks when that happens.
I think the reason it's also getting a lot of attention and pushback is all these data centers are linked to AI.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of promise with AI, but there is also a lot of fear, not only because AI may end up replacing people's jobs. AI may be just pumping out nonsense described as facts, but also just the incredible amount of energy and water that's needed for these things, which you alluded to, Kayvon. I think it's just genuinely bewildering to people. And I think one of the big unknown questions is, if technology advances to where you don't need these giant data centers to run AI programs, and it could, I don't know, fit into the size of these white box that I'm holding right now, will St. Louis, St. Charles, and everywhere else just have built a bunch of useless buildings that will no longer have any utility.
And we've talked a lot about that boom in our reporting as well. Like, is this a boom that is going to be dried up? And then, you know, St. Louis or St. Charles or the state of Missouri, which is, they are really vying for these. The governor has said, like, this is something we must have. We cannot be the last dog to the bull here. You know, what happens to the puppy that doesn't get fed? You know, but to add to that, there's also this, you know, Senator Hawley proposed legislation, co-sponsored bipartisan legislation to start tracking how many people are laid off due to AI. This is a huge wave. The experts we've talked to say that we are, you know, this, everything that's happening is everyone's kind of in a triage mode of like, you know, build. But you know who's not in the triage mode? The people who are building these data centers, because they are the kind of leading these kind of government entities along and being like, hey, we want to build here. It's like, well, what comes with that? We've been seeing a lot of pushback from people in the communities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Jason's chiming in with thoughts about AI. I mean, as far as what state officials and lawmakers are saying, I mean, these are also issues that are very political, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the things, I think Kayvon and I talked to the same expert at Washington University, and one of the things I asked him was, this federal moratorium on state laws involving AI, would that have included data centers? And he said yes. So when Donald Trump talks about not allowing states to regulate AI, I think it almost certainly means that they wouldn't be able to regulate data centers. And we saw in St. Charles, for example, which is not the most Democratic mm-hmm. part of the region, there's a lot of bipartisan pushback to it, because there's bipartisan pushback against AI. And even Republicans don't want the Mississippi and Missouri River to not have any water because it's all being used in these data centers.
I think one of the comments I saw many times about the one down in Jefferson County is that, you know, there was one of the government officials down there basically saying, you know, don't, you know, like was trying to kind of make it into a political thing. And so many comments like, this is not political. I'm a Republican. I don't want a data center in my backyard. So the pushback is so bipartisan. And it's really like the pushback in St. Charles and the Armory and now in Jefferson County have been, and I believe one out in Montgomery County as well, it's been sizable.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up this segment, I want to make sure we give each of you an opportunity to talk about the stories that you are going to be pursuing. We're already in 2026, and Lucretia, for example, you know, you've looked at a lot of what is happening with jails in this region. Is there anything in particular that you're going to be looking at in 2026 regarding our jail system?
Sure. So, you know, it's no secret that there are glaring issues at the St. Louis City Jail. But more recently, I've been reporting on issues at the county jail as well, the St. Louis County Justice Center. Definitely this year, and especially at the top of this year, going to continue digging into both. And at the county jail, digging into, you know, whether or not the jail is going to be able to receive any of the millions that jail leaders say they need to make improvements to the building out there, which is nearing the end of its 30-year lifespan. I believe it's 27 years old now. There's frequent issues there at the county jail, like flooding in the jail cells, feces, detainees having to stand in feces, issues in the shower, mold, disgusting kitchen, cleanliness issues and throughout the entire jail. And so if anything, I would definitely love to ask if anyone has a loved one that's staying, that's currently detained at either the county jail and especially the city jail, please reach out. I would definitely love to speak with you and hear your perspective. And if anyone could connect me with someone that's, you know, their loved one that's housed there to speak with them directly about their experiences, that would be great also.
And your email address?
Sure. Yeah, my email is L Wembley. That's LWI, M as in Mary, B as in boy, LEY at STLPR.org.
And very quickly, Kevon, how can people reach you?
Yeah, it's K Mansouri, KMANSOURI at STLPR.org.
And who do you want to hear from?
I would like to hear with people who are struggling with housing, people who have been affected by the May tornado. That's going to be a focus for me. And anybody who feels like that they're not being, that their concerns about what's happened with tornado, especially their concerns aren't being answered.
Mm-hmm. And Jason?
You can email me at jrosenbaum at stlpr.org or instant message me on Instagram, Jason Rosenbaum, full name, very creative. I want to hear from people about how they're feeling about the upcoming election season. And I'm especially interested to see if there is a blue wave nationally, whether it affects the very red Missouri or whether it barely makes any difference. Mm-hmm.
Politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum, Kevon Mansouri, economic development reporter, and Lucretia Wembley, general assignment reporter, all here at St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.